Hello, everybody. Charisse here with a very special announcement. I am thrilled to share that RCAT is now an official AIA continuing education provider. With this remarkable distinction, RCAT has launched RCATemy, a continuing education platform for the busy AEC professional. And here's the really exciting part. You can now earn continuing education credits by doing exactly what you are doing right now. That's right, you can now earn AIA credits by listening to select episodes of Detail. Whether you're working around the house, on your commute, or stuck in a waiting room, just listen, take a brief quiz, and your credit will automatically be recorded with AIA. It's really that simple. Plus, bonus points that much of our content qualifies for that elusive HSW credit. And we all know how valuable those are. What more could you ask for? We aim to please. Find out more at rcat.com/continuing-education or follow the link in our show notes. And thank you for tuning in to the RCAT Detailed podcast. This is an original podcast by RCAT. Try the number one most used website for finding building product information and save time and money. No registration is required with RCAT, so try it today and get ahead on your next project. Visit RCAT.com. That's ARCAT.com.
Everything on the fourth and fifth floor is meant to support all different personality types, like the quieter young people, the more gregarious young people, people who like, I mean, even kids, you grow up and then some are like bound to their bedroom and they want to be alone and they're like playing video games. And then some are like in the living room all the time. So just trying to accommodate all different personality types.
This is Detailed, an original podcast by RCAT. I am your host, Charisse Lakeside, Senior Specification Writer at RDH Building Science and fondly known as the CSI Kraken. We will speak with professionals who share their insights into the most complex, interesting, and odd building conditions and the ingenuity it took to make it work. Join me as I pull back the curtain on the building industry and uncover the lessons learned. You'll gain valuable knowledge to help you better navigate your next project. My guest today is Emily Ray, AIA, project architect at Wheeler Kearns Architects in Chicago, and AIA Chicago 2024 Dubin Family Young Architect Award winner. Emily is dedicated to equity-driven design for nonprofit and community-based clients in education, arts, and social services. A project architect at Wheeler Kearns Architects since 2017, her award-winning work includes Broadway Youth Center, Great Lakes Academy expansion, and the Bernard Zell Onch Emmett, I don't know if I said that right, day school expansion. As a founding member of AIA Chicago's LGBTQIA+ Alliance, she mentors as well as advances inclusivity in architecture. AIA Chicago honored her with the 2024 Dubin Family Young Architect Award. The project we will be talking about today is the Broadway Youth Center project, also in Chicago. But before we get started, don't forget to take a look at the project photos and drawings as you listen along. You can click the link in our show notes or visit www.rcat.com/podcast. Tucked into the heart of Chicago's Lakeview neighborhood, just alongside the Sheridan Red Line station, the Broadway Youth Center, or BYC, offers more than shelter. It offers sanctuary. Operated by Howard Brown Health, this project evolved out of a cohesive community that reflects the youth they serve and the staff.
Howard Brown Health is a health and social services network in Chicago. They have several different existing locations, and they've been around for decades. So it's an extremely well-established organization serving people who identify as LGBTQ primarily. But the Broadway Youth Center is one specific group within that larger organization that is specifically targeted to supporting young people ages 12 to 24. And so the Howard Brown Health Broadway Youth Center had been operating out of a 4,000 square foot storefront on Broadway Street, just north of Irving Park in Chicago. So in the Boys Town neighborhood of Chicago, or maybe that's uptown, but the lines kind of blur. So they were extremely successful in that location. I think they actually started out in the basement of a church, even further north in the city. And then they grew into their own storefront. And then it came time for them to grow even more. They were looking to grow from 4,000 to 20,000 square feet. And most Howard Brown Health buildings operate in existing buildings. They're just interior renovations. And this was an opportunity to build from the ground up and really kind of try to capture the ideals and the mission of that organization in a ground up building. So it came together with a pretty lofty goal to take this very tight-knit, you know, organization where these kids were there every single day because many didn't have another place to go during the day. Many of the staff members actually grew through that organization before they transitioned to become staff members. So all this to say, it's extremely tight-knit. They're in this one storefront. And then our challenge was to expand that over several different floors and yet maintain that tight-knit community. So that's how the project came about.
This five-story brick-clad facility is a place where LGBTQIA+ youth can access care, support, and community, all under one roof. To achieve this, Emily explains what the principles of trauma-informed design are and how they built them into the DNA of this project.
Trauma-informed design is really just a process of empathy. I think it's just like a formal name for empathize with your client and put yourself in their position, understand what reactions they have to certain stimulus in the environment. So it can really run the gamut. It can mean a lot of different things. At least I think it can mean a lot of different things. But in general, it means understanding that the end users that you're trying to support and serve here have gone through experiences you may not understand, but you need to gain that understanding and then minimize those hurdles in your building, like whether it's sounds, sights, a feeling of needing to have spatial control. So you really need to create a feeling of safety and security within the building. A few examples of trauma-informed design that we used in this project. There's some very simple, kind of straightforward ones, like whenever you have a room, make sure that there's no one feels that they're trapped in a corner, like make sure there's always several different exits, give people autonomy. Never make people feel like they have, like they're stuck somewhere. In this, it's apt that the train is going by right now, because in this building, sound was actually really, really important. And I learned this through the programming phase of the project. We learned that many of these young people had experiences living on the street, and the sound of a siren was extremely triggering to them. So, and we were building this building across from a hospital, actually, which on one hand, like we're a health services building. There's certainly, you know, maybe it's a good thing to be across from a hospital. There's a lot of things that they can connect with. But what I learned through talking to these young people was we need to absolutely minimize the sound of sirens. And so we used triple pane glazing, which is not cheap. But that was like a very high priority investment. It was never on the chopping block to be removed from this project, because from day one, we understood sirens cannot be infiltrating this particular safe space. And then also the building is located, like I am right now, just 5 feet from the train station. So that triple glazing helps minimize, you know, a lot of that external stimulus and create a more peaceful environment.
An interconnected network of services at BYC supports every young person who walks through its doors, offering a wide range of opportunities for care, connection, and growth.
So most Howard Brown Health facilities focus on medical care, but Broadway Youth Center in particular focuses on a combination of medical and social services. And they really work together to support one another. So they try to get young people in the door for one certain service and then connect them to all these other services that they may not have known that they needed or may have been hesitant to seek out. So really, this building is like a net. It's like a network in physical form. So the medical services are everything from STD testing to providing, you know, gender-affirming care to basic medical services. And then the social services include, there's a lot of vocational programs helping kids get their GED, connecting kids with other job opportunities. There is a donation center, so kids can go there and get clothes if they're going to go into an interview. And then I think the heart of the building is really just, like I said before, a community space for kids to go when they may not have another place to be. They go there, they find their friends. You were talking about your people and your network. This building is that for these young people. They're going and saying, like, we have very similar experiences and it's been hard for us to find a connection with people because of, you know, who I'm discovering that I am. And this building supports that journey for them. So the heart of the building is the drop-in space. It is just a community space with games and, you know, video games. There's a dance room. They can, you know, vogue in the dance room. They can sit around and read. It's just a place to hang out.
To deeply understand the mission behind the project and shape the right program, Wheeler Kearns engaged in extensive meetings and empathetic dialogue with the clients and the staff.
I think particularly for a project like this, gone are the days where an architect comes in and knows how to design a building before they talk to the end users. So what we did is we spent about 6 weeks doing a lot of different interviews and observations at their existing location. We joined several of their community meet every day around noon. I think they would have a community meeting, and it's just a loosely organized meeting where kids are talking about like what happened to them the day before. They had different topics, but we would just sit in to those meetings to just, again, understand, you know, gain that empathy piece, understand where these kids are coming from, young people are coming from. So we spent about 6 weeks trying to use interviews and observation to build that empathy piece. And then the understanding of the network of the building was extremely daunting because the bubble diagram was insane. We were like, the kids come in for this service and then they get connected to this. So this room needs to be close to this room. And like I said, everything was in one simply connected room. And we were like, how are we going to connect these kids to all these different services across several floors and not just have them be lost in a stairway? Like, you know, how, because a lot of it is staff making sure that kids know that these services exist and kind of prodding them like, hey, while you're here, have you ever thought about doing such and such? So you don't want to like, once they're in the door, you don't want to like just lose track of them. So the network diagram was really intense and finally distilled. We tried several different versions of this layer cake and how to manage. The words that the staff used was flow. So how to manage the flow. That's just what we heard every meeting. Like, I don't think the flow is working. I don't think the flow is working. So ultimately, I do know that the flow works because I've been back several times. And the staff said, trust me, the flow is working. It's, you know, it's working like clockwork.
Positioned next to public transit, the center is easily accessible to young people from across the city. The transit-oriented location also meant the project was exempt from typical parking requirements, giving Howard Brown the freedom to devote more space to community-focused services.
We were surprised that this was the site they selected. we were always kind of like, it's going to be a challenge, but they wanted to locate it in that specific neighborhood because it is like a nucleus of that particular group of people. And they would really get a lot of traction being located in that neighborhood. And it's an extremely dense neighborhood. So there's not a lot of available space. So we had a single residential, previously residential block, which in Chicago is very standardized. It's around 20 feet by 120 feet, just, you know, a grid. So we had this one block, and this lot was a little wider than typical Chicago block. I think it was like 25 or 27 feet wide. And we, in Chicago, there weren't many opportunities for like zoning, getting any zoning relief in any way because it was just a single lot. But in Chicago, you can easily take your side setback on one side of your building and cut it in half. So we did that, gained ourselves like a foot and a half, and that was a big deal. And ultimately, what we ended up with was, I'm not sure, I think it was around 23 foot span inside the interior space. So yeah, it was an extremely tight lot. We built to the maximum of the zoning envelope. The rear of the building actually kind of, the ground floor kind of slips as far as it possibly can under the L train tracks. And then it cuts back for the floors above and then comes up. So every inch was a premium in this site.
The building's exterior speaks volumes. A dynamic patchwork of bricks in varied tones and patterns wraps around the structure like a quilt, an intentional nod to the diversity and unity of the community it serves.
The masonry quilt evolved. We explored two different concepts for the building's exterior expression. I mentioned that this was this organization's first ground-up building, and they really wanted it to be a beacon for the city and to be like a physical manifestation of their mission. So our two main ideas, core concepts, were the lantern, which was kind of having a more opaque base, and then at the top, locating that community space where it has views of the city all around, and it would be this kind of like glowing lantern beacon out to the city of Chicago saying, here is a safe space for young people. And then the second concept we explored was the quilt. And the quilt says that this multitude of voices that comprise daily activities at this Broadway Youth Center is expressed through a multitude of different masonry materials on the outside. And we used masonry because it was, frankly, the most affordable material. We had the contractor early on just do a cost comparison of different, you know, skin materials. And masonry in Chicago is typically the cheapest. So we said, okay, we're going to use masonry. It also is nice because it blends with the adjacent residential buildings. So we can really, you know, we can downplay the institutionalism quite a bit. But what we wanted to avoid was like just a very like typical developer looking brick building. So knowing that we had this layer cake to deal with, like five floors, each of them minimal floor to ceiling height, we're like, we don't want it to look like that, you know, just layers of floors. So we made sure to design the masonry panels so they're larger and they kind of slip past the floor, you know, each floor, to, again, take this layer cake of program and wrap it within one singular expression and then really knit it together so that it looks cohesive. So that was ultimately the direction we went. And I won't lie to you, it was because brick was the cheapest material.
A central goal of the building's entry was to create a welcoming atmosphere that puts visitors at ease, while ensuring that safety and security remain a top priority. Once inside, a greeting area opens into a cafe-like atmosphere filled with light, warmth, and color.
A lot of thought was put into the first impression approaching from the exterior, because again, we want kids to come in off the street and be like, I feel welcome to go in that door. So we scaled down the entry quite a bit. It's a 7-foot entry door. The awning is at 7 feet above the ground. We brought that quilt expression out into the plaza. So we used pavers that have a similar tone to the brick. So it kind of folds down, and it's a very, very modest front yard, but we made sure to have places for kids to sit. So again, it's like baby steps. If they're not comfortable going through the front door, at least we're creating a safe place for kids who may not have a home to sit and hang out with their friends. So there's a bench around the tree. There's a little curb step down to the sidewalk level. And then there's a bench right outside the front door. Those are all places that say, you're welcome here. You are allowed to be here. You are not going to be, you know, negatively affected by being here. So then once we get them in the plaza, then through the front door, it was really challenging to balance security, but at the same time, make it welcoming. So we had to use a lot of graphic film in a creative way. Security is very important. They need to make sure that the staff need to know who's coming in the building, you know, to keep it secure. But at the same time, they don't want it to be like Big Brother. So right when you walk in the front door, instead of having a security person, we have a greeter. They're at the greeter's desk. The young person makes eye contact with them right off the bat. Oftentimes, this staff person, like I said, has gone through Broadway Youth Center, so they can immediately empathize, say, like, you're in the right place, you're welcome here. And then the cafe space is an unprogrammed space where, again, it's like the next gate. It's like, okay, they made it through the door. Now, if they're not going to go anywhere else in this building, just give them a place to sit. They can just sit here. They can get food here. And then if they want to leave, they can leave. Maybe they'll come back, you know, another day. So it's all about lowering the threshold to entry. And the cafe is just an unprogrammed lounge space where kids can ask for a meal or just sit there. Like I mentioned, this is an extremely dense building. So the cafe space is modest sized. And then beyond the door on the ground level, that's where the medical service rooms start, medical exam rooms. So we have medical exam rooms back there, and then level two, the whole floor of level two is medical exam rooms.
The layout of the 17,780 square foot building follows a clear rhythm. Clinical services are located on the lower floors, administrative functions occupy the middle level, and the upper stories open up into social zones, including a vibrant double-height lounge and dance studio bathed in natural light.
The third floor is the staff floor. So it's really important for the staff in a building like this to have, I think we learned that it was important to them to have some reprieve and a place for respite. You know, it can be a lively building. So they needed a space where it was just dedicated to staff, and we located that in the middle of the building so they can easily bounce up or down. So they have an open office, and then they have a dedicated staff lounge, which is actually really quite lovely and warm and relaxing. So a lot of effort was put into support. I would say as much effort was put into supporting the staff here as was put into supporting the users. So the fourth floor is where the drop-in starts technically on the fourth floor. So fourth and fifth are that real heart of the building, the social services and the community rooms. So the fourth floor we designed to be quieter and really like all the decision making was centered on like, make it like a home. So the fourth floor is like the quieter floor. It has sleeping rooms, which this is not an overnight shelter, but if kids need a place to rest during the day, there's the sleeping room. There's the Netflix area, which is like video games and just relax on a couch watching Netflix. And then there's also some classrooms and vocational services on that floor. And then the top floor is designed to be like the more gregarious floor. So that would be like the living room. And it's what I mentioned earlier, like the big open space with games and, you know, hanging out with your friends up there. On the fifth floor, there's also the TGNC room, which is trans and gender nonconforming. It is a specific conference room to support young people who are enabling young people who are trans and gender nonconforming to support one another and learn from one another. So that's a dedicated room. The dance room is the only double height space we were able to preserve in this very tight program. And the dance and movement room actually was not even on the programming document when we started working on the building. That emerged just through the programming efforts when we were learning from kids. A lot of them just love to dance and express themselves, and there didn't seem to be an opportunity for that in the programming document. So we were like, these kids, you know, they can learn, they can sleep, they can hang out, but they really need like a very exuberant opportunity. So everything on the fourth and fifth floor is meant to support all different personality types, like the quieter young people, the more gregarious young people, people who like, I mean, even kids, you grow up and then some are like bound to their bedroom and they want to be alone and they're like playing video games. And then some are like in the living room all the time. So just trying to accommodate all different personality types. They also use it for a larger cinema space to screen movies. So we designed all, so there's the double height windows that in front the train track and the train station. And we designed those roller shades with a projection designer. So you can project artwork on the backside of the shades, or you can project, you know, movies and stuff like that. So we envisioned young people interested in graphic design being able to design artwork that's then projected out to the city of Chicago.
The interior finishes intentionally break away from the cold institutional norm. Warm wood tones, vibrant murals, and abundant natural light create a welcoming atmosphere throughout every space.
We spent a lot of time on lighting. You know, I could not care about lighting more. Like I really care about lighting in spaces. So we try to integrate a lot of direct indirect lighting. Again, we were like, we're not doing any 2-foot by 2-foot lay-in troffers or anything. So we're always trying to bounce light off of surfaces just to create indirect, soft, homey lighting. Every space in this building has a window. That was another requisite that was never on the chopping block. Even therapy spaces and one-on-one spaces, even medical rooms, every room has natural light. So that was a client-driven decision, or really most of our meetings early on were with the staff, not even like the CEO or the owner's rep, or they were there, but our meetings were with the staff primarily. And they were like, we have to have natural light in every room. So lighting was really important. And I think that we used it in a pretty efficient and creative way to avoid an institutional feeling.
Even with a seemingly straightforward project such as this one, permitting in Chicago follows strict guidelines in regards to fire codes and exterior ratings.
I feel like Chicago's, they're listening to me when I answer this question. Like, building department, don't hear me talk bad about you, but I think Chicago would give you a run for your money as far as hurdles to get a building permit. It's very challenging. This building was relatively straightforward. One building code hurdle we encountered during the permitting phase was a different interpretation as to how we needed to set back the rated glass on the exterior face of the building. So Chicago is still super, super conservative when it comes to fire ratings on exterior walls because of the legacy of the Great Fire in the 1870s. So they take the strictest interpretation of any code when it comes to, you know, exterior ratings and how fire might transfer from one building to the other. So we have this super tight lot, and fire rated glass is extremely expensive. And as I mentioned, we had a requirement to provide a window in every room. So that was kind of difficult because we're like, well, this whole facade is going to have to be rated glass. The side setback that we did not cut in half, that glass did not have to be rated because it's far enough from the property line. But as soon as we cut the other side set back in half, we're now within a foot and a half of the property line. So that glass all had to be 2-hour rated. So we kind of labored over this detail of the window where we would have these rated jams that brought the window further into the space. I think it was minimum 2 feet from the property line. The face of the glass had to be in order to not require it to be rated. So we designed this whole jam detail that would fulfill what we understood to be that code requirement. And then the city officials who were reviewing it had a different interpretation. We did have to seek an interpretation and some leniency there for them to understand like this very specific detail that we designed because of this very specific challenge.
Striking a balance between preserving the integrity of the integrated design and selecting materials within budget constraints proved to be a significant design challenge.
It was designed very holistically, exterior and interior. One could not live without the other because we knew the budget was so constrained that we weren't going to be able to layer in a bunch of additional finishes. And we knew if we wanted to capitalize on, you know, the cost per square foot, perhaps we needed to find a structural system where we could leave things exposed and still create a warm environment. And this is just like, I'm going to explain it in one big swoop. We were like, we have the volume of the building. There's nothing we can change about that. We're literally building the zoning envelope. But we want to leave these floors open. Like you said, flexibility was key. And we don't want to spend a ton of money on extra ceilings, extra materials. So we actually we investigated a lot of different structural ideas. And the most cost effective was this proprietary composite slab system called ComSlab. So it's a metal deck with concrete. And it has these deep flutes. They're like 11 inches deep. And that enables it to span the full width of the building. And that just freed us up on the interior to, in a building as, programmed as this, keep spaces as open as possible. And then the added benefit was the underside of that deck actually does look very attractive. So we painted everything out. We left the ceiling exposed in a lot of cases and bounced light off the ceiling to get a lot of indirect light. And the whole goal was to avoid institutional feel and also do that on a very constrained budget. So I think that was the biggest challenge, and that's how we addressed it.
Working within the constraints of a site so close to public transit meant that the construction phase required a minimalist approach. To navigate this, Emily and her team used a ComSlab system to maximize speed and efficiency.
The logistics, we were talking about site logistics from the minute we started conceptual design. We're like, we cannot design anything for this building that's going to require a large staging area. We cannot bring in large pieces of steel. We cannot bring in large anything. So the design was really driven by the site logistics, to be honest. That coupled with the fact that we were going to have to pay to have flaggers on the street for deliveries and flaggers along the train tracks. And as you probably know, they are not cheap. And in Chicago, they're union, so it's really, really not cheap. So we knew we needed like a super efficient, fast construction, like to build the structure, it needed to be really efficient and fast, and it needed to be require very little staging area. So that's where the ComSlab system also came into play. So I this is the first time I worked on a building that was like a cold form, pre-formed panels to form the structure. So it's cold form framing, load-bearing cold form framing exterior panels, and they just built it floor by floor. So they'd build the two long walls and then ComSlab span, and then the next two walls and then ComSlab span. And it just went up so fast. And all they needed was like one crane to crane in these large pre-panelized systems, put it into place, and then span across it. I was like truly amazed with how quickly that exterior actually went up.
For Emily, incorporating empathy workshops into the design process was a transformative experience, one that will continue to shape her approach to future projects.
I learned so much from the programming phase and listening to these young people firsthand explain, you know, what they wanted their day to look like and what they didn't want their day to look like. So I this is the deepest dive that I had ever done into the programming phase and, you know, empathy building type exercises. And from that point on, I'm a huge advocate of like empathy workshops in the programming phase. And my colleagues and I actually have put a lot of effort into kind of underscoring the importance of those workshops early on and really having the end users answer the design dilemma for you rather than you trying to answer it. So that was my number one biggest lesson from this project that I continue to live by. And then the second one was how much power we actually do have to drive equity in the world. So this client, obviously, they're a primarily Black-run organization. They primarily serve LGBTQ community. So they wanted their construction architecture team, consultant team, and construction team to not only hopefully represent them as much as possible, but also to, you know, really abide by and drive equity in the workplace, which in the case of this building was the construction site. So I sat in on the contractor, the interviews for GCs, and the client, I was blown away with like the questions that they were asking, because it was not just how fast can you build this building? How much is it going to cost? And what happens, you know, when you go over your, it wasn't just questions like that. It was also, what are you going to do to affirm different genders when they're working on this job site? What are you going to do to help expand opportunities for marginalized communities on your work site? And the contractor that came in just with flying colors with that was our contractor, Boolean Andrews. I will happily plug them because they did such a great job in this interview. And then throughout the project, they started implementing, you know, gender neutral bathrooms on their construction site. And they honestly, it kind of stemmed many new initiatives for that contractor. And, you know, GCs aren't known to be particularly progressive, and they wanted this project, and to get it, they had to meet this criteria because it was a requisite of for this client. So I just learned a lot about the power that you can have if you're willing to stick to your principles in driving change from this particular client.
The Broadway Youth Center represents a new chapter for Howard Brown Health. As the organization's first purpose-built facility, it embodies a vision of care that is inclusive, affirming, and rooted in place. It's a space where young people, especially those who have felt excluded or unsafe elsewhere, can feel seen, supported, and empowered to thrive. Before we close out this episode, I always try to gain some additional insight from our guests about the greater industry. I was curious to hear Emily's thoughts on where architecture is falling short in terms of inclusivity and how the industry can do better.
To me, a lack of having the people in the design room who look like the people we're serving, I think that's still the biggest failure. And what we really need to focus on, and what I try to focus on, is cultivating a whole new next generation of architects who actually look like and have similar experiences to our clients. Because, you know, we can all do our best to empathize, but a lot of times our clients ask, I mean, they want people who have had similar experiences as them in the room. You know, there were several times when even working with the Broadway Youth Center, it was like, make yourself very much look like a young person and don't try to come in and tell them anything. Just try to be there and listen and try to look like you're one of them. And it's hard to do. And yeah, I think I would say that that's the number one challenge is the pipeline and cultivating a generation that's much, much, much more diverse than the current one. And then also, this is just a second piece, making sure that young architects can like be authentic in their role. And I think we're kind of done with the everyone's wearing black and, you know, wearing the same glasses. And I want to see much more personal expression with architects and, yeah, authenticity, I would say. My firm is completely like that as well. It's like you can really bring your authentic self. And when you're spending so much time there, it's like, I hate feeling like I'm two different people, you know, it's tough. So when you can be this, you know, more of a combined person or more of yourself at work, it means a lot.
I truly enjoyed this conversation with Emily. I hope this episode sparks a new idea, helps you solve a problem that you've been working through, or inspires the mark that you want to leave on this world.
There was a time in my life about a decade ago where I was really struggling personally, professionally, finding my path, understanding what my goals are with my life, kind of like a real dilemma of why am I here, you know? And I think it was coupled with the fact that I was a late bloomer. I saw a lot of people gaining success earlier than me. That was affecting me. I was thinking, why haven't I done such and such? Why haven't I done such and such? And through a lot of, you know, work and mental health work, ultimately what kind of saved my life was realizing like none of that accolade matters. And really the only thing that is important to me and that I truly have to accomplish in life is making the people who I interact with, making their lives better in a small way, in a large way, it doesn't matter. But if they walk away and I have improved it rather than made it worse, like if that's all I do in my life, then that is like the one and only goal. And once I came to that realization, it freed me so much. And I can't tell you like, actually, I was talking to a colleague just the other day and she was telling me about my star or moon sign or whatever. She said, 2016 must have been a big year for you. And I was like, actually, it really was, because this is when I unlocked that realization that like, I don't have to strive for accolades. I can just be a good person and like, that's enough. And then that's been my motto in life basically since then.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and want to learn more, visit rcat.com/podcast to see photos, details, and more related project and product information that we discussed today. While you're there, take a look around rcat.com. For over 30 years, RCAT has been the resource for AEC professionals to find the right products for their project. Try RCAT and see how their tools can save you time and money and help you get ahead on your next project. Visit rcat.com. That's ARCAT.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can support us by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, and sharing this with your friends. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back to share more stories and lessons learned to help you navigate your next project.